in both triggering and reinforcing the radicalization process. Our prisons are rapidly becoming more involved in radicalization, leading to violent extremism. The prison environment, in particular, can be a potential breeding ground for radicalization. The problem is widespread and has increasingly engaged policymakers' attention over the past couple of years as a result of interactions with partners and stakeholders worldwide. Radicalization leading to violent extremism is not a new phenomenon for our prisons, but the current scale of the problem, together with the growing numbers of extremist offenders, especially the FDF or foreign terrorist fighters, calls for reflection on existing perspectives, measures and interventions. It is clear that the biggest challenge in addressing the problem of radicalization inside prisons is applying a human rights-based approach to meeting security and safety concerns, and that there is a real need to build strategies based on respect for human rights and compliance with international standards. We need to focus on security, but also on the treatment and rehabilitation of radicalized detainees. Following the attack at the Jewish Museum in Brussels in May 2014, the planned terrorist actions that could be relegated to the VA in January 2015 and the Copenhagen attacks in February 2015, the need for a global approach to radicalization, extremism and terrorism within the prison cleared to front. To this end, the action plan to address radicalization in prisons was announced by our Minister of Justice in March 2015. Detainees are a particularly vulnerable group for radicalization, which deserves further attention and follow-up. Through feelings of frustration towards society, group pressure, the closing of normal society, search for religious or ideologically inspired similarity and or the desire to belong to a group. They are more prone to radical thinking that sells against the fundamental values and fundamental rights of our society. In the aftermath of the attacks in Paris of November 2015 and the attacks in Zaventem and Malbe in March 2016, the importance of the structures of a structured approach to the problem in consultation and cooperation with all the institutions and services concerned came to the forefront. The approach to radicalization within Belgian penitentiary institutions is a shared responsibility of the federal government and the communities. I think that a very important question in our setting is how we can detect signals of radicalization amongst our prisoners. Before we can monitor and risk assess the population, we first have to detect which prisoners are showing problematic behavior in relation to radicalization. So the main question here is, how can we put these people on our radar? First of all, we have prisoners who are on remand or convicted for offenses under terrorism law. So these people are already on our radar because we know they have been involved in offenses related to terrorism. Secondly, we have My Service. That's the unit at the central level of our prison service who receives information from external partners like the terrorism unit of the federal police, the secret services, and OCAT. And OCAT is the institute that makes, that analyzes for our country and decides which threat level Belgium is for the moment we are at level 3. Very important is the information we receive from the prisons, so the information that comes from the local level. It is a duty of all staff to have awareness to report signals of radicalization among prisoners. This is in line with the action plan for, of our Minister of Justice. The signals can be very different, for instance, when prison wards conduct a cell search, certain materials can be found, like literature, drugs, weapons. Remember the second slide? Where we found a weapon in a cell with Allahu Akbar in her. We asked the staff to be in particular vigilant for changes in behavior, changes in appearances, in appearance, and changes in spoken word. Sometimes the prisoners are reporting signals to prison staff about for instance, the subject. The most important thing at this level is that the observations we detailed. That these observations are detailed and written down in very neutral, objective terms. That means that at this stage, no interpretation is made. We just want the raw facts. There are facts. And the information from the local level is centralized at the unit extremely. We analyze this information, put it in context, and add the information from the external parties before making an interpretation whether or not a particular inmate should be further monitored and risk assessed. This is the moment where we put certain individuals on our radar, and we do it by placing them on the lists. It is also important to mention that just one report from the local level is not enough to put someone on that list. If it is the case, the unit extremism asks the local prison to further monitor the prisoner and to provide at regular times more information about that person. So the final result of the work of my unit is a list of four categories of prisoners. Two categories are placed automatically on this list. These are the prisoners on remand or convicted under terrorism law and the foreign terrorist fighters. The two other categories concern the prisoners who are placed on this list in a multi-agency approach, meaning that the input of information from external partners and the Central Psychosocial Service extremism is required, and that an analysis of all this information occurs. It concerns prisoners who committed terrorism-related offences. They are not on remand or convicted under terrorism law, for instance, a theft where the police investigation charges linked with terrorism, or who are showing behaviour closely linked to a violent extremist offender. Also, prisoners who are showing signals of radicalization or who are radicalizing others during incarceration, or where there is a strong suspicion of this behavior, can be put on our list. We are aware of the pitfalls of our methods. More specifically, we do know that the quality of the information from the local level depends on the knowledge of the observer about the subject. This is particularly important to avoid false positives, meaning that they report signals for people who shouldn't be put on our radar. Classical example of a male with a long beard and praying. Therefore, we try to invest as much as possible in training for the frontline staff. For instance, we created an e-learning module, and the staff follows 10 days intensive course supported by the Asylum Immigration and Integration Fund, Internal Security Fund. During this formation, they learn about penitentiary policy and phenomenon analysis, radicalization process, normative Islam, radical Islamic groups, extremist groups, and there is also a training of 2 days about the Vera 2, and also about disengagement and de-radicalization. Also concerned are prisoners who are able to stay under the radar, and no information is available. The so-called false negatives. We know that guidelines are distributed that inform extremists how to stay under the radar. There is a course of this is of course a huge challenge which we have to deal with. But we also think that there are benefits in the way we are working. First, the unit extremism works according to the multi-agency approach, meaning they work together with different external and internal partners, leading to more and better contextualization of information. And the fact that the decision about whether or not someone is placed on the list takes place at the central level guarantees more uniformity in the decisions. The same way of looking at signals, analyzing and interpreting them. So the starting point for the monitoring of radicalized prisoners is the internal list from the unit extremism. I looked up the numbers last week, and there are, for the moment, we have about 222 prisoners who are monitored. You can see we have 54 in category A, and 97 in category C, and we have in B and D 33 and 38 prisoners. The goal of the monitoring is the prison allocation and the determination of the regimes. In the action plan, we use a hybrid model for allocation. We are concentrating the leaders and the recruiters on a specialized wing in order to prevent the spread of the ideology in our prisons. Next to that, we also have satellite prisons where there is trained front line staff for observations. So observations can be made thoroughly. It's a hybrid model, dispersal of the forward and the criminal opportunists, on the one hand, and concentration of the leaders and the recruiters on the other hand. We have put different tools in place to make the monitoring possible. At the local level, we ask prison wards to fill in an observation list on the daily basis. We ask for observations about appearance, behavior, state of the cell, material they found in some media, activities, contact with staff and other prisoners, appearance and behavior of visitors. These observation lists are used by the prison governors and the local psychosocial service to fill in an evaluation list that is sent every 3 months to my service and the central psychosocial service extremism. At the central level, the unit extremism and the central psychosocial service extremism evaluates all the available information in order to give advice about the placement and regimes of these prisoners. The decision is taken by the regional director and the director general. We also have meetings with the local levels, to discuss the climate in the prison, particularly related to radicalization, the context they have with their demands, other people involved in the field. Because of the regular meeting and input from the local level, changes are also monitored, and we use the information, for instance, changing the regime to less strict regime, or the other way around, change the allocation to different type of prisons. And that brings us to the final topic of risk assessment, where we will try to give you an answer on why we do it, who is risk assessed, and how we do it. Why? We assess the risk and needs in function of the detention planning, regimes, prison allocation, the mode of the execution of sanctions. After a certain time, normally in Belgium, one-third of the after one-third, people can ask to be liberated, or they can ask for release, and conditional release. Therefore, we have to assess the risks. These are the needs and the strengths of our prisoners, of our prisoners in function of the release plans. In a perfect world, everybody who is identified as a radicalized should be assessed. So the whole list. In reality, however, we assess convicted offenders of category A and C because of the time-consuming aspect of doing such a risk assessment and because of the fact that we don't get access easily to collateral information, especially the judicial files. For prisoners on remand, we don't have access to judicial information because of the secrecy of the investigation. I think it's the same in other countries. Then, how do we use the VERA tool, Violence Extremism Risk Assessment? We are using the VERA tool, a professional judgment approach. We have chosen this instrument because of the empirical basis of the included indicators, and because it gives the possibility to structure the available information. Without tools, it's unreliable, and actuarial tools are too rigid. The structured professional judgment approach also creates a possibility to look beyond the risk and protective factors that are present in our individual case. It clearly starts that the risk assessment is a process where you first identify the risk and protective factors where you have to formulate and mark a narrative about why and how somebody committed the offense in the past. This gives the opportunity to formulate possible risk scenarios for the future. What can happen? Under what circumstances and what will be the kind of relapse, the severity? This is not fortune telling, but providing a solid scenario for the future based on what happened in the past. After all these different steps, it would become more clear what management strategies should be put in place to reduce the risk factors and to strengthen the prospective factors. These strategies can be very different, going from treatment over monitoring to control strategies. And then I will give you a few benefits of the risk assessment. There are some challenges also, but the VERA tool is structured, systematic assessment of empirical-based indicators. It shows which information is still missing and should be sought after. It gives some indicators that the indicators are dynamic, and that's very important for risk trajectories. Dynamic, it means it's once you make a risk assessment, you have to redo it a few months later because people are changing. Then it There's also some scenario planning based on solid information. But there are also a few challenges. Risk indicators are informed by and limited by the state of the knowledge. And the result is a professional judgment, not a silver bullet. It's certainly interpretation. Unpredictable triggers are you're working with people, and people can change in strategy, modus operandi. It's not the first time that people are mistaken. You heard it this morning. And incarceration makes certain risk factors less visible, more difficult to assess in a prisoner. In the prison environment, people are not acting the same as outside the prison. And particularly for Belgium, also in Belgium, the access to judicial information is difficult and hinders the proper use of these kinds of instruments. Also, more research is needed, especially about the predictive validity of the indicators and the instrument as a whole. I will finish here my presentation. Thank you for your attention.